position number 22356, reel 2.
Freddie Andrews, reel 2.
My other recollection was that, bearing in mind that Normandy was a farming community, and the shelling and that sort of thing had gone on prior, because there were cattle, cows and that sort of thing, who had been hit, and nobody to take them away. We were too busy fighting or whatever. And after several days, I just rolled over on their back, dead, and then burst, and the smell was a bit yuck. Yes, we were already taking casualties and that sort of thing, but one of my jobs that I put on myself was to see that my section had food, apart from bully biscuits, which we had as stew and every other kind, and the biscuits, which were made by Sprats, the dumb people, which were horrible, but you couldn't stop eating them, sort of thing. So that I decided that we had to supplement it any way we could. In addition to that, there were cows there, of course, which hadn't been hit, but all the farmers had gone away, and these poor things, there was nobody to milk them. But we had one farmer bloke with us, and so we got one cow, and being medic, we said, that's, we want milk for our patients, and we painted in whitewash on its side, big company, keep off. And so we had milk. There was a farm yard nearby, and there were some pigs where the smallish pigs where the sow had got killed, and obviously there was nowhere to tend them, and they'd just died anyway, so we thought a couple of these for the section would be rather nice. So these were slaughtered and hung up behind the tailboard of our lorry, and at this juncture the company commander came down and said, get around, we've had a dictum from brigade that you mustn't take all the produce there, because these people will be coming back, and gave us a right lecture. And then he said to me, Andrews, I shall be coming back for my bit of pig. Yeah, we had chickens and that sort of thing. Another time there was a bullock that had just been hit, and we decided that it was didn't want to go to waste, so we had some of that. At one stage we were told that we'd been surrounded. We thought, well, all this training, and now we're going into the pot, sort of thing. But anyway, that didn't happen. So I suppose we come now to where we took on our job of breaking out of the bridgehead to take Carn. And this was Hill 112. Which we've been back to many, many times. At the top of the hill, it overlooked the plain going down to Caen. So the Germans didn't want to take it, but bear in mind now that this is getting on, and Hitler realised that it was Normandy was going to be the main point. And by this time he brought his panzer divisions that he had stationed up round the part of Calais down to defend Hill 112. So the we were up against three panzer divisions. Headquarter company, you see there's in a field ambulance there's headquarter company and A and B companies. The A and B companies, but particularly B company, which is my company, were the mobile ones to be dispatched wherever we thought that we would be needed, really. But our headquarters was in a chateau, not a beautiful chateau, but a tatty one that had been used by the Germans officers' mess. To get to this from the road, there was a drive up between two orchards up to their main gate. And A company were put in one orchard, B company in the other. HQ set up in the chateau. Outside the chateau, there were what had been the old livery stables with accommodation above. So these were turfed out, and one was set up as a reception station so that we could say, yes, well, you're walking wounded, we'll deal with you here, or I'll put them on my ambulance to go the next stage back. Also, of course, the cooks and that set up in there. But anyway, we were a big company, we were in this orchard, and a DR came in, dispatch rider came in, with a thing to say that there was a convoy going along the road at the bottom towards Caen with munitions and food generally, and we were to put a ambulance on the back of it for not if but when. So my pal, particular pal, the staff sergeant, he said, should we send? And there was one of our section called Ken Bramley, smashing little bloke that came from up north somewhere. But my wife and I got really friendly with him, because when we were in Somerset, he used to come back here on weekends because it was too far for him to go back home. So we got very friendly with him. But he was a very good orderly. So we said, okay. So I said, right, get Ken. Ken, get yourself an ambulance and find another orderly to go with you and go down the end and wait for this convoy to buy and tag on behind it. He'd just gone and shelling started, which was landing all over in our big red cross we had laid out and that sort of thing. Some of them came down into our orchard. One of my blokes started shouting. I crawled out to him and he got quite a lump of his arm blown off, or badly lacerated. But he was saying, I won't quote his words, but shoot me. of course, we didn't. Anyway, the shelling finished. And so after the shelling finished, the ambulance came back up, and what had happened is that they got down the end of the drive when the shelling started. They got out the ambulance and dived in the ditch, and my great pal Ken was on top. And he got a piece of shrapnel right through the back of his neck. And I always blame myself for sending him to his death. I know, somebody had to do it. And because he was one of ours, we got to dig a grave in the courtyard of the chateau and fed him across, so that having sent him down there, 2 or 3 hours later, I was sewing him up in a blanket. No body bags in those days.
Do you think the Germans knew that they were shelling a Red Cross unit?
They didn't bother. We wore brassards, so white band with a Red Cross on, Geneva Convention and all that sort of thing, but snipers didn't take any notice of that.
But this was artillery shelling? This was artillery shelling, was it?
Yeah, or snipers. But anyway, during this period of fighting for Hill 112, which seemed to go on for ages, and at one stage during this period, our little unit got through 1,780 casualties in 36 hours.
Can you tell me what exactly you would do with the casualties, step by step?
Yes, yeah. The field ambulance is the most forward unit of the medical services. The ones before that are with the infantry or whatever, when their bandsmen, peacetime bandsmen, act as stretcher bearers and that with one medical officer, which we sent forward. And so that the take my thoughts. So they got casualties of the infantry, so they would put a bandage around them if they could, and if it was more serious, and had to get them back to us, which we called a CCP, which is a casualty collecting post. And there we were set up, and we were trained to set up with our three-ton lorries, which had canvas which opened it on either side to make a tent, basically, so we could treat them in there on trestles. With the idea is that we set up and dug in the holes into the side and the bottom of these tents, because a patient or an injured person feels a bit safer underneath, down under the ground than on top. But, so that we would treat them, and then our ambulances, the section's ambulances, would send them back to our headquarters, who then decided they'd do some operations, but decide whether they were only wanted a couple of days off or something like that, or they go back by ambulance convoy to the beaches and on landing craft, and they were coming back to Pompey. Yes, it was quite tough. But on the, we were, the Yanks were trying to take it, the Canadians were trying to take this hill without effect. And it wasn't until a few years back it was disclosed that we weren't supposed to take this hill immediately, because we were holding these three Panzer divisions down while the Yanks went round the back of them and out to Paris, which not very helpful. So that ultimately, on this particular morning, we were told that the attack would be going in at dawn, and my section was given a map reference to go to, which was just over the brow of the hill, and that we would, technically, the infantry, and that would be a couple of miles in front. But when we got there, they hadn't got that far. But we set up where we were told, and when I say we got set up, we didn't have time to put our penthouses up, and because we had casualties coming in on jeeps and bring carriers and on stretchers and just dumping them on the ground all the way round us, we're just inundated with casualties right from the word go, and we're just over the top of this brow of this hill. So our job was to, we had three medical officers with us, but the medical officer of the, I think the 5th Dorsets, had been killed, and one of our doctors had to go forward to take his place, which left us restricted. But with all these casualties, I mean, dozens of them around there, and it's a case of looking around to see which is the worst one to treat first. And incidentally, it didn't matter whether they were British or German or Yanks or anybody, they all got treated the same. But then we were treating them, and some of our blokes were with the ambulance, of course, were running them back across the river to our HQ and coming back for another load. But this was spread out over a wide area, and it came to a point where that I was more or less on my own. I had one taffy bloke with him, he had a bit of shrapnel through his knee. But a lot of the casualties in these times were legs partially blown off by shoe mines. I had helped surgeons do this before, this operation many times before. But this came to my lot, there were two. I thought, well, these two have got to be done first. And there's still mortars and shells dropping around. But I decided that I was capable of doing this job on my own. The MOs and the air and the blokes were either treating or, say, running them back or putting bodies up in the wood. So I started to proceed to do it. Bearing in mind, this is just on a stretcher on the ground. Luckily, when it's first blown off, the wound is more or less cauterised and the blood goes into shock. His blood pressure's gone down. So it's when he gets over that a bit and it starts pumping again, is where he's likely to bleed to death. Anyway, then we come to anaesthetics. We used to carry glass ampules of CV chloroform and ether, which you just broke in a bandage of cotton wool and put him out that way, which I proceeded to do. And if you had time and the circumstances it right, you would get ligaments and tie off the main arteries that were exposed by the wound. But under the circumstances, these are not, it wasn't on to get out aneurysm needles and that sort of thing.
To get out what?
Aneurysm needles. You better forget that one. So that we had things called Spencer Wells forceps, which were a cross between, not scissors, they didn't cut, but had two clamp ends, and when you put the handles together, they locked. So I used those to put on the main arteries to seal them off, and then ultimately, luckily then we had penicillin powder, so we paid up with penicillin powder and gauze and wood. Anyway, there's apart from that, the bloke's leg is almost hanging off. And, there's no way he's going to join up because there's a big lump of bone missing. But from my experience, I realised that I had to leave as much flesh on there as possible because ultimately he's going to have a limb and he wants some flesh to form a stump sort of thing. So, yeah, I was quite confident. And so I did it. And
you did what?
Amputated his leg and bandaged it up. But then I came back to the second one and I didn't have any more anaesthetic. So I gave him a shot of morphine and sat with him down that way, and then repeated the same operation, amputation, that I did before.
Did you have to cut through any bone? Did you have to cut through any bone?
No, the bone's missing. No, the bone's missing. It's just flesh and... That's all, you know. I had to trim up the bones and where it was sharp and that sort of thing, but to win the necrosis forceps. But anyway, I did it. And I just got these two ready, and my company commander came back, and I said to him, Jerry, I've done a... just done a couple of amputations around that ambulance there. I told him what I'd done. He said, well done. But, so, they went off back. To our HQ, and people asked me several times whether I was frightened, and what I said to them is, I didn't have time. Anyway, a little while afterwards, we still had casualties laying around which we were dealing with. And a dispatch rider came in and said, your section has been... where's the company commander? I said, I haven't a clue. Well, I know he'd been working somewhere. And the message said, you've been relieved, fall back. So, realising, because we were in a beachhead, medical and surgical supplies are at a premium. So I thought, I'm not going to leave this lot up here. So we managed to get these panniers up on the back of the three-tonner. And I had the idea of starting it up and taking it back to HQ to get sorted out. Unfortunately, when we went to start this lorry, there was a bit of shrapnel gone through the engine block, which is not conducive to starting. Anyway, there was a bit of a wreck of a jeep over by the orchard. And I think the tyres were flat, something like that. But anyway, the other two blokes I had named with me, we got on this jeep and I drove it back across the river and up to our HQ. So I went up to the transport bloke and told him that there were still casualties up there and also the lorry with the equipment on, which we didn't want to lose. So I got two four-wheel drive Humber ambulances and some tow ropes and went back across the river and loaded the ambulances up, obviously, and towed the lorry back across the river and up to but, yeah, so because of the operations that I did, I was ultimately awarded the military medal. But if anything, I thought for going back over the other side, which nobody knew about, was... But, yes.
So how did you know exactly what to do in doing the amputations, just from what you'd observed previously?
And helped. Yeah, I knew exactly what to do. There were many of these shoe mines casualties, and I'd assisted the surgeon on many occasions.
Were the two men conscious when you amputated?
No, so I gave them, the first one, we had this ampule of chloroform ether, so he was out. But the other one with the morphine, but woozy, as best I could do.
Do you think he knew what you were doing?
No, I don't think so. I don't remember him wincing or anything like that, because he was still in shock. But, and then, according to the drill, I had to fill in a form or to say what I'd done and that sort of thing, and writing down where the bang's going round you, it's not. And also, of course, I'd given him morphine, and the danger of that is that I give him a shot of morphine and he goes back 5 miles to our HQ and they say, well, he's in bad shape, give him some morphine, which of course two lots isn't very good. So we had a pencil, a chimonograph pencil, and used to write on the forehead, big M, quarter, and the time.
What did the quarter mean?
Quarter gram, grain. At another stage in during this, prior to the Battle of Hill 112, there was it was just afterwards, a big tank battle, and my section, this consists of two three tonners, a 15 underweight, and three ambulances, dispatch rider, and it's obviously that if we can get in a safe position, it's easier for the patients coming in, and they feel safer. And on this occasion, we're like a country road with high banks on either side, so we just drove up into this that which we called the gully, and set up there. Put canvas sheets over the top so that we could put our pressure lanterns on them in the evening, and we got set up there, taking a few casualties, and then after dark, they started shelling, and so lights went out and people dived down under the lorry sometime, but which we were told not to do. But at one stage, they shouted out. I was known as Andy, of course, in the army. Andy, Bill's got hit. Where is he? Out the lane somewhere. So I grabbed my, what we call a monkey box, that's a step up from an ordinary first aid satchel. It's got more things in it. So I crawled up this road and said, where's Bill? He's up there farther a bit. Is that you, Bill? Yeah. And this is in the dark, but we used to, our drill was to take a grain sheet with us, and we had a torch thing, a button torch, to see what we were going on. Is that you, Bill? Yeah. Where you been here? He says, up my ass. I said, is it bad? He says, no, I'm frightened to put my hand around there. So, anyway, I got his traces down, and there was a little bit of shrapnel about as big as a split pea, and that was old Bill's war wound. we were still treating casualties all the way round, and not any casualties, of course, because there's still blokes with toothache and goodness knows what they've got to be treated, and also bomb happy cases, bad exhaustion, or whatever they call it. This is probably a syndrome these days, but they've all got to be treated, and if there's fighting or not, the field ambulance is still working.
What are the symptoms of being bomb happy? How can you recognise it?
Shaking and fright. Can't control themselves. Want to go home.
So what do you do?
Hmm?
What do you do?
That. Well, you sedate them and that sort of thing, but this is being on the we wouldn't tackle these cases because they would go straight to our HQ rather than through the